Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. There are actually two Mangalacharana verses here. The author only comments on the second one. Also, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur skips over the first one. So, I didn't even translate it. Let's just at least translate the first one. Swananda rasa satrishna trishna chaitanya vigraho jayati apamaram api kripaya sudaya snapayam babuva bhumau syaha. Let's see the subject. Well, I guess Krishna Chaitanya Vigraha is the subject. May that person who has taken the body of Krishna Chaitanya... anyway, this is... in the second verse, Jayati comes again, and there it's expressing super excellence. So he is super excellent. And he's having the urge to taste his own, the rasa of his own ecstasy. And he's caused even the lowest class people to be immersed in ecstatic nectar, sudaya. He's bathed them in nectar. Anyway, this is a reference, of course, to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this verse is offering respects to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Kavi Karnapur does say something about it. He sees two different interpretations. It could refer to Krishna, and he's being called Krishna Chaitanya Vigraha. He's Krishna, and he has a transcendental body. Or it can be understood as referring to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We see in the books of the Goswamis, the original Goswamis, there's not too much reference to Lord Chaitanya himself. The attempt in the beginning of our Sampradaya was to present books that would be accepted outside our Sampradaya also. They wanted to attract a large audience. And so, to make it seem less sectarian, they wouldn't talk about Lord Chaitanya too much in their books. There's one Mangalacharana verse here, you know, reference to his Ishtadeva is given in passing, and that's it. There's lots of discussion of Radha and Krishna in the rest of the book, in the poetic examples. Now we're looking at that verse, the second verse. Sajayati yena prabhavati drisi sudrisham vyanjana vritihi atishayita padapadardo dwanir diva murarate. Well, this verse can be read, I think, three different ways. Basically, it says that he is super excellent. He, by whom there is the influence of, or such and such has its influence, the vyanjanavritti, of, in the eyes of those who have good eyes. And that vritti, that activity, is transcendental to pada and padartha. And it's like a reverberation or an echo. And it is the dwani, the reverberation of the flute of the enemy of Mura. It's identified with the sound of Krishna's flute. Now, let's see what Jiva Goswami, Kavi Karnapur himself has to say about that. We already discussed how He says the Jayati is intransitive. It doesn't mean so-and-so conquered such-and-such an enemy. It's not transitive in that sense. It's intransitive just meaning somebody is super excellent. Jayati. Okay. What word? No, it does not mean that. Where are you looking at that word? No, vyajate means to be suggested. This is what vyanjana does. It's connected with the verb vyaj. Let's say suggest or hint. Because offering of obeisances is implied here. It's not explicit. There's no word namaha. There's no verb nam. No verb vande. It just says the sound of Krishna's flute is super excellent. That's all. But that implies, by speaking of the super excellence of the object of devotion, the subject of devotion is implying his own inferiority. And that's an act of offering obeisances, by the definition. So apakarsha bodhanukula vyapada vishesha namaskara. Namaskar is a special, particular activity that is, it helps one understand, somebody understand your inferiority. So that is done in this verse, although it's not done explicitly. Now, how is that sound of the flute, that's apparently the subject, the dvani. Yeah, so the dvani is actually the subject. Vyanjana vritti is just an apposition. It's actually sudrisham vyanjana vritti yena saha. It's actually a bahuvrihi compound, an adjective. And the subject is actually the dvani, the murala dvani, the sound, the reverberation of Krishna's flute. But you have another word, dvani, in the sentence. That makes it a little more interesting. The iva, sometimes you have a misplaced iva. Normally, iva is supposed to come after the word that it modifies, but sometimes it's put somewhere else. I think in this verse, the proper interpretation is that we're talking about the dvani, and the dvani is like the sound of Krishna's flute. Unless it can wait, because I want to complete a few thoughts. So, how is that dvani? How is that? Let's just take the dvani to be a sound for now. We'll discuss what kind of sound it is. Murali, okay. I thought it was Murala. Murali dvani, yeah. Why I wrote Muralo? What edition are you looking at? No, is it the translator? Is it my file or the Granta Mandir file? Okay, let us use the AK1 file. Okay, everybody get the AK1 file and we'll use it so we don't have the additional complication of two different versions. Okay, so if you don't have the AK1 file, get it. You should be looking. You should have access to it because we're going to have a lot of verses quoted. And you should be able to see the verses to look at them. If you don't have a computer, look it over someone else's shoulder. I think we have enough to go around. Yes? Okay, but let's not even use that edition from now on. Okay. Yeah, the book has Murlo, and I just copied it. It's wrong. It's wrong. You write that it's wrong. Okay, yeah. Anyway, the thing is, we're not in immediate process of publishing this book, so we don't need to do a thorough editing of it. Better than get bogged down in comparison of two different editions, let's just use one edition.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's Murali, not Murillo. You're right, right. So, subject is the sound of the flute is super excellent. So, there's some of the other words in the verse show how it's super excellent. Because it's atishayata padapadarto. That's an adjective. Masculine nominative singular. Modifying Murali 20. Ah. What does it mean? It can mean a few things. It depends on which way you're reading the verse. One way is, lost the page. Oh, here. You can take, you have pada and padartha. One meaning of pada can mean the places, of, such as Vaikuntha, the Lord's own abode. And padartha can mean the things that are found in Vaikuntha. Like, okay, now we had this book rebound and the pages are out of order. Okay, let me go over here. The Brahmananda that comprises the substance of Vaikuntha. Okay? Gormon, just wait. Now, Tabhyam Atishayi is Kavi Karnapur's explanation of that. This sound of the flute excels, is better than both Vaikuntha and Brahmananda. And what's the, it says the bija, what's the root cause of that? Why is it so? And then the other phrase is, yena, the word yena prabhavati vjushi sudrasham vyanjana vritihi. That, one meaning of that, yena is third case, hetu bhutena, expressing hetu, by which cause there is such and such, or not is, but prabhavati, has its influence. The vyanjana vritti, the gloss that's given first for vyanjana is vigata anjana of the gopis who have, they're sudrisha because they have nice eyes. Okay? This is the young gopi girls. And the their vyanjana is not vegetables. It's vigata anjana, the condition of having their eye makeup wiped off because of their tears, because they're crying. They hear the flute, they cry, and all the makeup washes down their face. That's vyanjana vritti. Anandashu dauta twat, because that vyanjana, that anjana, is washed away by their tears of ecstasy. Okay. And then here, even in this reading, there is an upama alamkar, a decoration, ornament of speech, by introducing a metaphor. Like just you say, you know, the lover says, your faith is so beautiful, it's just like the moon. Well, that's not a metaphor. Your face is the moon. You know, that is upama, comparison. So actually compare, here we say dvani or iva. Just like dvani. So, in this interpretation, the sound of Krishna's flute makes the gopis cry and washes away all the makeup in their eyes. Vyanjana vritti, it's just like the dvani you find in poetry. The essence of the best of all kinds of poetry, uttama kavya. And what is that like? It's also atishayatau padapadartha. Dwani, or the third mode of meaning, suggestion, comes after and transcends both literal meaning and figurative meaning. Abhidavritti and Lakshanavritti. This will be studied in detail in a later chapter. It's superior. It's a higher mode of a more subtle mode of expression. So it's atishayata padapadartha. Actually there, pada means words, and padartha means the meanings of words. The ordinary words and their ordinary meanings are transcended by poetic suggestion. And in the second way of looking at it, sudrisham means those who see well, those with good vision. That's the alankarikas, the experts in poetic theory. In the drishi, or the consciousness of which experts on poetry, there is vyanjanavritti, or the vyanjanavritti becomes very powerful, prabhavati. And vyanjanavritti means the function of poetic suggestion. So both of those meanings are there. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti points out a third reading. Let's find it here. You can take the word vyanjan and understand that it comes from the verb... Can you explain this? Help me this. Vyanjana iti ni antat yuch pratyena siddha. It's produced by the suffix yuch ending in ni. Vyanjana. And you get a feminine. So that's the derivation of the formation of the word, yes. You going? Okay. You gonna walk? Okay. No, I need it. Gourmand. And using that derivation, he says the meaning of it can be vyanjana vritti means the function of maya, and taking vyanjana to mean prapancha, or creation of the material world. So this dhwani can be understood as the primeval sound, you know, that causes the creation of the universe. So there's vyanjana vritti, or the whole evolution of material creation from dhwani, from nada, the sound that precedes even Omkar. And by associating with that living sound, Chaitanya Rupa, that word is there in the previous verse, there is Vyanjanavritti, or that Vyanjanavritti becomes comprehensible by those who are Sudrisha, the Gyanis, can understand the evolution of the creation by concentrating on that transcendental sound. So we have three different kinds of dhwani. You have this reverberation of Krishna's flute. You have poetic suggestion. And dhwani can also mean the sound that causes the creation of the universe. And this is quite appropriate to talk about that nada, because what is kavya made out of? it consists of prana. It's the life air is expressed through kavya. In other words, it's a speech function, and we speak using prana. So it's relevant to talk about the original sound, the original sound vibration, in reference to in the context of poetry, because poetry is founded on that. Poetry is made out of sound. So to refer in our Mangalacharya verse to the primeval sound that created the universe is relevant. That sound created everything, including poetry. Everything that exists, including poetry. Okay. So, okay, that's actually mentioned. I see. What I'm doing is I'm reading the commentary to the part of what Kavi Karnapur says that we haven't read yet. I jumped ahead in the commentary. Because that reference to nada, that third interpretation, is given by Kavi Karnapur himself. I just jumped ahead in Vishwanath's commentary. Dhwani is also nada brahma, the original sound, which is the same as the absolute truth. And Kavi Karnapur then shows by quoting from Shankaracharya, from Shankaracharya's book called Prapancha Sar Tantra, the tantra that tells you the essential facts about material creation, how it all comes out of Maya. So there's a statement by Shankaracharya: Mula Tadat Pratamam Udito Yastu Tada Parakyaha Paschad Pasyantyata Vidyago Buddhiyum Madhyamakyaha Vaktray Vaikaryata Vuvidishur Asya Janto Shushumna Badhas Tasmad Bhavati Pavana Previto Varna Sangaha. This is two verses. He doesn't use the word nada. He uses the word tara, which is equivalent. Tara is like the drone on a stringed instrument. It's the drone, the constant sound. So that's the original sound, nada or tara. So it's permeating the universe. That sound was there before the universe was created, at least in this theory, and it's created from the sound. And we agree, the Bhagavatam says sound is the first element, all the other elements evolve from it. So there's universal sound, that's the origin of everything. But in the individual living entity, it also manifests step by step. It starts from the Muladhara chakra at the base of the spine. And then it rises from there and assumes a second form called para. That's in the region of the abdomen. And then it subsequently rises up to the heart and is more manifest. In the heart, Vidya Go Buddhiyuk, the form called Pashyanti. I'm sorry, Pashyanti is in the abdomen, and then the third stage is called Pashyanti. I'm sorry, it's called Madhyama, which is located in the heart, and when that sound rises to the heart, it gets combined with consciousness, with intelligence. That means you start consciously composing your thoughts when the sound rises to that level. And then it rises up into the throat and comes out through the mouth. And that's the fourth stage of sound called Vaikari. And that's when the person is about to open his mouth and talk. We're really sure. The living entity is about to cry out. The sound rises into the throat, and in the throat it makes contact with the Shushumna nadi, the nerve called the Shushumna, that actually propels the sound out of the mouth. So in that fourth stage called Vaikari, the sound becomes audible. it actually becomes a concrete sound when there's vibration in the throat and in the mouth. Those are the four stages. And then Pavana Prerito, Varna Sangha. At that fourth stage, the combination of varnas is pushed out by the air. And that's the production of perceivable sound. Language, not just noise, but sound. Articulate sound. Articulate sound is made of varnas. When a cow moos, we can transcribe it as M-O-O, or in some other language, like in Sanskrit, they talk about rumba. I don't know what's the onomatopoeia for a cow's mooing in Sanskrit? So they transcribe it as Some other language, in Russian, how do you describe the mooing of a cow? What word do you use? Moo? That's probably borrowed from French or something. Anyway, different languages have different sounds that they think the cows are saying. But the cows actually are not pronouncing articulate phonemes, aksharas, varnas. They're just making noises. The noises may mean something to the cows. You know, like you're stepping on my foot or something. But they don't use varnas. They don't use articulate pieces of sounds the way we do. So we distinguish between incoherent sounds and articulate sounds. When it's a varna sangaha, an actual coherent combination, a sensible, ordered combination of specific varnas, then it's language. And poetry, real poetry, consists of language. If we just make some music, which is also coherent sound, but it's not made out of varnas. It's just toots and bangs and twangs, but different, you know, coherently organized. It's music, it's coherent, but it's not language. It's music. But when we say words made out of letters, that's a special kind of sound. That's human language. And poetry is composed in language. Music is one thing, poetry is another. You can put them together. You can have a composition that's both, a song with words, but still they're two different things. The music, one man writes the words, another man writes the music, usually. They're two different arts. So poetry is something made out of words, and words are made out of varnas. And this is where varnas come from. Come out of, it's the prana that permeates the universe. It comes out of the base of your spine, works its way up, and pushed out of your mouth by the air. Okay, so we have no problem accepting that explanation from Shankaracharya. There's nothing objectionable in that particular two verses. Let me check Vishwanath and see if I got everything right. Well, okay. We can be talking in the third interpretation that the dhwani we're talking about is that primeval nada that in a living entity comes out of his mouth as speech. Well, that's also Sarvod Krishna. It's also super excellent. Atishayena shayitau suptau parapadartau. So instead of atishayena meaning better than, it means that pada and padartha, words and their meanings, are shayitau, are atishayena shayitau, are in the most appropriate way resting or sleeping, dormant or included within. Sleeping or just present and potentially manifest within what comes out of somebody's mouth are words and their meanings. If I, you know, open my mouth and I manage to say something coherent, then what you perceive from 2 meters away are words and then also the meanings of the words. All I did was open my mouth and make some noises. But thanks to the magic of language, you can receive them and identify them as words and their meanings. So in the noises that come out of my mouth are sleeping the words and their meanings. And when they come out of my mouth and reach your ears and are processed by your brain, then you recognize them. You recognize the words and the meanings that are inside those sounds. When I utter a certain phoneme, I'm pushing molecules of air with my breath, and certain vibrations or sound vibrations are created. And they don't last very long. But when if they last long enough and far enough to reach your ears, then you recognize some phonemes. Those phonemes exist a lot longer than the sound I produced. The physical sound I produce is very fleeting. But the phonemes are eternal. And that's what you recognize when the sound hits your ear. You recognize the aksharas, the varnas, and from the varnas you manage to recognize the words and their meanings. So the words and the meanings are sleeping inside the sound. And they wake up when they hit your ear and are processed by your mind. So, by this chain of cause and effect, it's indirect because several stages are involved. By this chain of causation, dwani, or the primeval sound that underlies the whole creation, is the root cause of words and their meanings. By going through this whole complicated process of several steps. But underlying it, the original cause of all of it is nada, Brahma, the primeval sound. And everything that exists has been created by that nada, and therefore there is the vyanjana vritti, or the creative power, the power to create the whole universe from that nada, transcendental sound. Okay, and those who have good knowledge, the jnanis, they can appreciate properly the potency of that nada to create everything. And therefore, they worship the absolute truth in the form of nada Brahma. That's the third meaning. Okay, you have a comment? Vishnukanta? Do we have the microphone around somewhere? Okay. Anyway?
No. So, Atishaya Pada Padartha has been explained there in the third interpretation.
Yes.
Is that a modifier of Varanjana Vrittihi or Dvani? Both are...
No. The subject is... I think in all three interpretations,
dvani,
and see, there's a relative clause, the dvani by which the vyanjana vritti prabhavati. Vyanjana vritti is the subject of the relative verb prabhavati.
Yena prabhavati.
Yeah, so that's a relative clause. Vyanjana vritti is the subject of that clause, but the dvani is the subject of the main clause.
So Adishaya Padapadartha is the modifier of dvani, is it?
Yes.
Okay, so
because it's not inside the relative clause, it's outside it.
So there, the pada and padartha are, he's saying suptau inside the words, in the dvani itself.
In the dvani. The words and their meanings are sleeping inside the sound.
When in that context, dvani just means the words which comes out the mouth. It doesn't
well, let's
mean
just say it's the physical sound that comes out of your mouth.
Yeah, so
but that physical sound, as Shankaracharya explains, is actually an expansion or an evolution from the primeval nada, which comes out through your body and comes out as physical sounds.
So that's what
in those physical sounds are sleeping the words and their meanings.
So this whole verse explains about the creation of nada and until the stage of production of some sound from the mouth.
Yeah.
But there
nada creates the universe, but these two verses are describing how nada manifests in an individual living being.
Inside the chakras and then ultimately from the mouth.
Yes.
But here my question is the concept of the suggestive meaning, which is the third of the literal, figurative and suggestive, that concept of the dvani is not being expressed here, right?
Not in the third interpretation. That we find in the second interpretation.
Yeah.
First interpretation is the ointment on the gopi's eyes. Second idea of dvani is poetic suggestion. Third idea is shabda nada brahma.
It's kind of philosophical explanation, third interpretation is, right?
But then the author says this is relevant because poetry is based on sound. It's relevant for us to investigate the real nature of sound because that's what the poetry is made out of. So, although we're going to deal with spiritual emotions, there is also a physical basis, a scientific basis in physics for poetry also. We're also studying poetry from the angle of physics.
And I think the first interpretation, Vishwanath Chakravarti gives a huge explanation. So we are just skipping over different parts.
I'm not going to go into every single detail in the commentaries.
The vritti of Kavi Karnapura himself, we'll be covering that.
Which?
Kavi Karnapura's his own vritti on the...
Well, see, what I did is Yes.
The Kavi Karnapura's his own explanation on the like small vrittis, those things we will be covering, is it?
Say that again.
The vrittis that Kavi Karnapura himself gives, that will be covered in the class.
I will sometimes... I will explain part of what Vishwanath Chakravarti says, but I'll skip over other parts. Rather than get lost in a lot of details, as long as what we're talking about is clear enough, we'll just move on. Yes.
So it seems the way how he does this is that he gives a verse and then explains it, like every time a new section.
Well, sometimes,
or some sutras.
He sometimes introduces the verse or some statements. He says something before the verse and he says something after the verse. So let's just say he's got a running commentary and there are these verses embedded in that commentary. He has a running discussion. And when suitable, he puts a karaka. The karakas are the real definitions. The defining statements are found in these verses. You notice in this book, there's a separate list of the karakas in the front, and they're numbered. Karakas are these verses, the author's verses. Not the examples, but the definitions. Like these, well, these are Mangalacharya charita verses, but later on we're going to get verses that are mostly giving definitions. See, poetry, the way the methodology of presenting a poetic text is usually to define things, analyze them, you know, define categories and split them up into subcategories, and then explain. Basically, that's a system. So the karakas, the basic, you know, the basic verses that are being explained, they're mostly consisting of definitions and categories and splitting up into categories. Yes.
I was just thinking of the system itself as compared to the Vyakarana that we have seen. Like in grammar, we had a number of sutras and the vrittis and commentaries and so on. So we memorized the sutras and we understood the vrittis. And we dealt more.
You can
in
do
the
that also here. You can do that also here.
So here the system is similar, like
it's similar, but it's not just. You start with the sutra. You can have. Let's just say there's a running commentary, running vritti, keeps on going. And some things are said, and then there's a karaka, and then some more things are said, and then there's another karaka. There's statements before the karakas and after them.
So karaka means...
But the karaka is not... In grammar itself. The sutra is a rule. In this poetics, it's usually a definition or a listing of categories.
So which is for memorization, for the karaka or some of the vritti parts also?
Depends how much you want to cram into your brain. For those who are a little lazy, they can just memorize the karakas. And those who are more lazy, they can not bother to memorize anything. I would think that if there's going to be memorization, it would be of the karakas first.
And some of the concepts, some of the main concepts covered in the vritti should also be remembered along with the karakas in order to apply them. Is it so?
Yeah, if you want to know this science, you know, you want to master the subject, you should, maybe you don't have to memorize the vrittis. It would be good if you could. Then you can always cite the evidence of the karakas if you could remember them. And you should understand the vrittis. You should know everything. You should understand everything that was said in the vrittis. But you should, you know, it would be good to memorize the karakas, yes. It would be good. Then you'd be a real expert. Otherwise, you can put the list of the karakas in your computer and refer to them.
So in the second explanation, the comparison is made. Dwanir, you explained something about the reason for why the thing which is being compared and that which is to which it's being compared is inverted. Generally, ego comes after the...
Inverted? What's inverted there?
Like, ideally, it should be Murali Dvanariva Dvanihi. But here
oh, I said the word Iva. The word Iva usually goes... It makes a difference where you put the Iva. Usually, it's supposed to go right after the word that is modifying.
Yeah, so ideally...
Here it seems not to. It seems to be displaced.
What is the reason for that?
It's poetic liberty. I don't know... I don't know if it's an ornament of poetry, but it's something that poets do. It's just to say it's a liberty, you know, to make the poem sound good, to put, you know, make the meter flow nicely. That's all.
Can we understand just like the dvani which makes these things, the Murali dvani also creates those effects like that? Comparison is a literal comparison of the Murali dvani with respect to...
The Murali Dvani makes the gopis cry. I don't know, you want to say the Murali Dvani creates the universe? You can, if you want.
That would be superimposing two interpretations on each
other. Yeah, well, anyway, neither Kabi Karnapur nor Vishwanath is doing that here. They're satisfied to give us three interpretations. They're not going to mix them up. I mean, if you want to do that, you can try, but it might get messy. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Alankar Kostabha Ki Jai.